evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am the man that brought sexy back, Daniel Hummer, and I am here with one half of my testicles, Doug Hummer.
Yo.
And the other half, Eric.
What up?
How's everybody doing tonight, fellas?
Pretty good.
Good. Happy holidays to everybody.
Well, happy holidays to you as well, Eric.
That was a long pause.
Yeah. No. Unfortunately, that's what happens when you read something.
I thought I lost you for a second.
Anyway.
Hell yeah, happy holidays to the Unscripted family.
Yes.
We're here on Christmas weekend, still putting in the hours, still delivering you people and the great, great people of the Unscripted family some loving wrestling content.
Yeah, I mean, every other content that we're supposed to do this weekend, you can all go fuck yourselves because it is Christmas. But
yeah.
I was going to say, this is the only show we're doing this weekend.
Hard Justice 2006 from TNA. This is our first TNA pay-per-view, fellas.
I was just going to say, we've done a TNA roster tier list.
Yeah, that's
but we've never done a pay-per-view, right?
No, this is the first bit of TNA that we covered.
It took 3 years to do it.
3 years, long overdue. Eric's been asking for it for a while.
Eric's been asking for it for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's two things to take into account. One is, you know, everything has to be found on Impact Plus. There's
until now.
Service.
Yeah.
Until now, obviously, or at least the pay-per-views. And two, we're too fucking cheap to want to pay another fucking $9 a month for another
pay-per-view. Just because it's not worth it, right?
Yeah.
Because to do a show like once every couple months, it's just not worth it to get the service. But
all right, like WWE Network on Peacock, like that's, we watch that almost every week.
But now that they've officially released a lot of the shit on YouTube, we can definitely get into a lot more of the pay-per-views.
Yeah.
And other stuff, too. We'll talk more TNA. I'd like to do ROH stuff in the future.
Yeah.
And there's some old ROH
stuff
on too.
There definitely is. We'll look into the new Honor Club service as well, like if they, because that's where their TV is going to be.
Yeah.
And I've actually had the Honor Club service before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me and Doug had it.
I only watched it like 5 times. I was just like, all right, it's not worth it.
Didn't think it was worth it, yeah.
No.
But, TNA is one of my favorite eras in wrestling, to be honest. TNA around this time.
Yeah.
I thought they were really cooking like 2006 till about the time Hogan got there. Like 2004, 2005, 2000, like this era shit. I know people talk about Jarrett's Reign of Terror in the vein of like Triple H's, but I don't agree, and I don't think it's the same thing. Because I loved all the opponents he went up against, and I thought he was a good heel to keep winning and stuff.
Well,
and then he left for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and
so it's not like he was there forever.
Because I think it was around this time things really started to go downhill with his, and again, downhill with his wife, Jill.
Jack and Jill went down the hill?
Well, no. It's had breast cancer.
Oh.
Okay.
Lead with that, you fucking asshole.
I was trying not to rhyme, because I did not want to just fucking, and by the way, Jeff and Jill down the hill. But I was trying not to rhyme, because I knew that one of us would go there. I expected it to be me. But no, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, I think.
She is no longer with us.
She is no longer with us. He's married to Karen now.
Well, I didn't know if they just separated or.
No, she passed in 2007.
I'm looking like a real asshole. we got to bring this back. I'm sorry I didn't know about Jeff Jarrett's
it's
a significant other.
It's fine.
But
so this was a good time period because, and again, you got to remember too that around here they had the deal on Spike TV, but remember it was a 11 p.m. on a Saturday time slot.
I think
it got moved to Thursdays at 9 of in I want to say in April.
Yeah.
or in April of this year. But yeah, when they first started, it was Saturdays at night at the at 11 p.m. time slot, and then it moved to Thursday because they wanted a prime time slot.
Yeah.
But it was still going to be at like 10 or 11 o'clock. And then they moved it to 9, and then finally, you know, 2007, they got 2 hours and it was off the races.
Yeah, so fucking
And this was a good time for TNA because Christian Cage made his debut, almost a year earlier, and then Kurt Angle made his debut about a month later.
Right.
Yeah, so things were still cooking at this point. This is when things were getting really hot. You had a lot of good things going in. This week, do we want to give a worker of the week?
The person I would give as the worker of the week, just because I think that this person is doing real well, and it's mainly because of a promo she cut and what she did to Bianca Belair and that's your girlfriend Alexa.
Yeah. Heel Alexa?
I'm giving mine to Ricky Starks.
Yes. Giving his to who?
Ricky Starks.
Okay.
Who would have thought? I'm just fucking with you. I'd probably go Alexa, too.
Yeah.
I like heel Alexa.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, I mean, she's pretty much heel now.
She is.
You smack the most popular woman in the back of the head with a fucking flower vase.
You're a heel.
Yeah. Also, you know, this week was the return of Bronson Reed. You know, he's going to be Miz's new bitch.
Muscle.
Yeah. I guess, you know, they needed something ugly to accompany Miz to ringside, and Maurice apparently is busy, so they got Bronson Reed.
That's funny.
Actually, you know, I think Bronson Reed's better looking.
You're happy.
Wait, why?
All right. So coming off right before this, we have Victory Road, right?
Yeah.
Right before this is Victory Road, yeah.
And that's when Sting wins the Road to Victory match.
Yes.
To become the number one contender for the title.
And by the way, the new member of TNA management announced its Slammiversary back in June was Jim Cornette.
Yep.
Holy shit.
And there's the Briscoe with the GM or something?
Member of the championship committee.
Yeah, I don't like him as a heel, but we'll get to that.
You don't like who is a heel?
The Bisco. Legend Larry. Larry Legend, whatever you want to call
him. Yeah, he, the funny thing with him is when they brought him in, so it's the storyline with Raven that really turned him heel here. Because he was kind of a baby face, and then, you know, they started doing all the conspiracy stuff with Jarrett, and, you know, Sting started calling him the cancer, which is real fucked up because of what his wife ended up with.
Yeah, but Jarrett was a good heel.
Oh, he's a great heel. Because he almost, I really think a lot of what he was doing was pretty much just him kind of copying Triple H's Ring of Terror.
A little bit, yeah. But I almost liked it better
on
this
channel.
I almost liked it better than what Triple H was. And I like both eras, because I like a long heel run, because I'm a Flair guy, you know? So I don't mind, and I didn't even mind the Ruthless Aggression era with Triple H, because you would get your Rob Van Dams versus him in Booker T's, and yes, some of those guys probably should have beat him and won the title, but it was still cool to see babyface after babyface line up and, you know, lose.
Yeah.
And him keep going and who's going to be the guy. And I like that type of wrestling. It's very formulaic and it's old school, but that's a type of wrestling that I enjoy. So I like Jarrett's heel. And when he finally loses to Sting, you know, in a couple months, it's fucking awesome in the career versus title match.
Yeah, and then when he pretty much goes, look, I'm going home.
Mm-hmm. And then he let other people take the shine, you know, so.
Yep.
I don't know.
When Kurt Angle came in, took the reins.
A lot of people give him shit because he owned the company. But it's also like the only person you can truly trust is yourself.
Well, remember, he was just minority owner at the time because the Carters had really taken over.
Yeah.
And Dixie had no idea what the fuck she was doing.
Yeah. But, like, this stuff was still good. I enjoyed his run. And I enjoyed the people lined up to go against him and stuff. And it transitioned when it needed to. Because then you're building Samoa now. You got Kurt coming in. You got Christian. You got all these factors. And then Jarrett's like, all right, I'm going to step away. I think that was, like, I don't think he's as selfish as people say he is.
I don't
think. And then when he came back, you had that storyline.
And I didn't mean to interrupt there. But I think a lot of it, too, was, okay, the Carters.
Yeah.
And Dixie, because Dixie had no clue how to run a wrestling company.
No.
Like, all right, so I was told a long time ago by a former associate I worked with at Walmart about management. They're like, you know, he goes, you know, Doug, some of these managers here can't even manage a lemonade stand. And you can actually apply that to any facet.
Yes.
You can apply that to a lot of wrestling promotions.
Yes.
Like, there was a lot of promoters throughout the territory area where it's just like, what the fuck are they doing?
Yeah.
All right.
Tony Khan.
Dixie Carter, the only thing Dixie Carter can run is the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying she does, but I think that's the only thing she'd be qualified for.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. And but I do think some good wrestling came out of her time. Like, I don't think it's all bad. Like, this is actually good. Some of this shit's better than AEW now.
Yeah, and the funny here's the funny thing. Mike Tenay and Don West, I'm going to say this right now, were my favorite, besides JR and King, were my favorite commentary duo.
Really?
Because, well, I've always loved Mike Tenay.
Yeah, he's good.
I don't necessarily think he was great as, like, the head play-by-play guy.
He wasn't good with Taz.
No, him and Taz suck.
But that's also because you hate Taz.
Yeah.
But it's funny because, like, but no, I think Tenay and West did a fantastic job of calling things. I do think that a lot of the people, because remember TNA's booking team at the time, Cornette got brought in to work with Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
Vince Russo had come back to the company, which Cornette pretty much wanted to quit as soon as he found out Russo was coming back. But Cornette also had quite a few friends that were working there at the time, so where it's just like, okay, I can handle it since these guys that are here are my friends.
Yeah.
Which includes Dutch Mantel. Huh?
No, I was asking who would that be.
Yeah. Dutch Mantel was there, and Dutch Mantel mediated a shit ton. You know, for a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
Dutch Mantel was there. Believe it or not, Savio Vega was a booker in TNA. Terry Taylor was there, and Terry Taylor was actually friends with both Cornette and Russo. He was sucking Russo off more later on, but you also had, you know, even though Road Dogg was a performer, he was also kind of helping with the creative process. Obviously, you had Jeff. You had Jeremy Borash, who was doing a lot of the booking. Disco, Lord help us.
Well, and they had a lot to play with, too. I mean, this to me, this is one of the most underrated talent rosters of all time.
Yeah.
You got a prime Abyss. You got a prime Joe. You got a prime Gail Kim leading the females. You got AJ and Christopher Daniels in a tag team, for God's sakes, and against LAX, which is another, you know, famous tag team. you know, probably historic. You got the machine guns going against each other on this card, for God's sakes. They're not the machine guns yet.
Yeah.
You know, you got fucking prospects like Monty Brown. You know, he didn't end up anything because he, you know, chose family over the business, which you can't blame him. But Monty Brown was fucking, he was ready to go at this point. He was awesome. The pounce and shit. Rhino came over, and he was a good addition. Cage was a good addition.
Monty Brown should have been champion in 2005.
He should have. But what I'm saying is they had a hell of a talent roster at this point.
Yeah.
No, and this is before, like, Knockout started really picking up and stuff like that. But
Yeah, Gail Kim was, and obviously Serelda, they were the only women really on the roster.
Yeah.
So because Trinity had crossed
Gail
over.
Kim. Wow.
Trinity had crossed over. Tracy Brooks really wasn't wrestling.
But so that was before that, but they're already, like, they had a killer roster at the fucking time.
Yeah.
And it gets better and better, but still, at this point, it's a pretty badass roster. Let's get into the event. We're in Orlando, Florida at the Impact Zone. There's 900 people in attendance. But it's a pay-per-view. It's Hard Justice.
Well, this was also a way, too, for them to save money.
Yeah.
And only go to big arenas for, like, the big shows.
Yeah. No, I know.
Like a Bound for Glory.
Anniversary.
Bound for Glory. The Lockdown, which is, you know, the all-cage pay-per-view. Technically, those are the only ones you really need to take on the road because those are your big ones.
Yep.
So, Sanjay Dutt and Cassidy Riley defeat Jimmy Jacobs and El Diablo in the pre-show. And also another dark match, Ron Killings against A1. Ron Killings was a pretty big draw for them, it seemed like, at the time.
Yeah, but he was also starting to get, like, really frustrated.
Well, I can tell why he would be frustrated. They put him on the fucking pre-show.
Yeah. Well, because also, too, they had broken up the crew, Three Life Crew.
Yes.
And then, like, they started kind of capitalizing because he started doing his own rap music.
Yeah.
But they really didn't know what else to do with him, and he was feeling frustrated creatively to where he didn't, like, he just kept taking time off.
Yeah.
Like, after Bound for Glory in October, he was pretty much, he would only come back to do, like, sporadic pay-per-view appearances.
Yeah.
Because he was just like, I do not, you know, like, he spent a year trying to get out of his contract.
Damn.
Then he went to WWE after, right?
In 2008, yeah.
What's up? And he's been there ever since, entertaining millions. Eric Young and Johnny Devine open up the card. Johnny Devine, part of Team Canada, right?
Eric Young was hot at this time. I mean, hot over the crowd.
Right, yeah, no, I got you. Part of Team Canada, but then became part of the Paparazzi.
Yeah.
Because Team Canada had disbanded because Scott D'Amore actually went into the booking and producing role.
Right. Eric Young did get a pop, and Jim Cornette was yelling at him backstage. It was funny. He's like, you better not lose!
Yeah, that had aired like a couple days before. Cornette was not at the pay-per-view because Cornette was technically still working for Ring of Honor at the time. He had to finish up dates for Ring of Honor because Ring of Honor
then he went back to Ring of Honor too, right?
In 2009, yeah. So Ring of Honor and TNA were kind of working together. And then
they worked together a couple of times.
Yeah, well, no, they were working together back here. They were doing, like, the talent exchanges and all that. Because Joe and Jay Lethal and AJ and Daniels and those guys were all still Ring of Honor guys as well. I think Christopher Daniels was Ring of Honor tag champion.
Yeah, he was big time in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, at that time. But then I think it was around here, around this time where Dixie started telling the guys, because the accusations about Rob Feinstein, who was
the original owner and founder, or who he helped financially back Ring of Honor. He was one of the original owners.
Yeah.
He liked the same kind of penis and pussy that Jerry Lawler liked, you know, the kindergarten pussy. So they decided, okay, we're going to, you know, we're going to kind of pull out. Well, Feinstein had been asked to leave, and then gradually TNA guys started kind of getting, I mean, they were still kind of working for him, but they were also gradually, like by April of 2007, they were pretty much done with Ring of Honor.
Right.
And then Feinstein, actually, you know what? I'm not going to have any more jokes about Feinstein and Jerry Lawler and how they're trying to open up a kindergarten kiddie club.
No more jokes after that one.
Yeah.
Eric Young and Johnny Devine really light the place up. It's really a fire performance.
Yeah.
Because the pyro lights the fucking stage on fire.
Yeah, that was weird.
I mean, that's like the first 40 minutes of this show. They do scrap together a good pay-per-view after, but the whole story at first is the fire, and then the announcers have to leave, and they have to stall. And
which, how the hell do you, why the hell do you include that on a DVD release?
I have no idea, but it was fucking hilarious.
Like, I understand live pay-per-view, and there's nothing you can do about it, but cut it from the DVD.
Yeah. They just kept hyping the shit up.
They were hyping up a four team matchup
that they never
got to, but they still decided to have Gail Kim and that Serelda on there. Which, by the way, you know, Serelda was told afterwards, "You're done. Like, we don't need you anymore."
This is her last match.
Yes. She was done. She was awful.
Yeah, she didn't.
But
well.
Because Gail Kim is fucking hot, they're just like, and like Gail Kim's entrance, and we'll get to that later on. But good lord,
she can wrestle too.
I said that. Yeah, Gail Kim is.
She's beautiful and athletic.
She's one of the best female wrestlers of all time.
Yeah.
She would be on my top 10 females.
Exactly, because she's beautiful and athletic. And she's not just a pretty face.
Is she married?
Yeah, she married Robert Irvine, the famous chef.
Oh,
that's
damn.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He's muscular as fuck. She could bench press me.
She probably only married him so she can get a gourmet dinner every night.
Yeah. Maybe. But this match, I would give this match like 3 stars because it never really got to do anything.
Well, yeah.
I feel like they cut it short, right?
I think they had to, like, I think they thought they had the fire under control, but you can even see with the fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
That, like, the one part of the structure was still on fucking fire.
Yeah.
So they do the match, and then they just cut to today and Don West for what seemed like for fucking ever. And then they're like, come on, guys, just stall. And then they go to that long-ass video package with Sting.
Yes.
For Sting and Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then afterwards, but, like, it was during that video package to where they're just like, all right, everybody out of the building. Like,
yes.
We have to get you out of here. So that's, you know, what they did. And they're just like, oh, no, it's fine. And the fire marshals are like, no, it's not. Get out of the building. Because part of the thing was still on fucking fire.
Yes.
And then they had the Monty Brown promo, which interview, which was long as fuck.
Yeah, he was good, but that did go on for a while.
Well, because, again, they're trying to stall for time.
Yeah.
And
that's
then
a weird position to put somebody in.
Yeah, and then they had Shane Douglas and the Naturals come in and cut a promo.
Oh, Shane Douglas went on for fucking ever.
Yeah, and piping a match that they were in the middle of canceling.
Yeah, they did cancel that, I remember. Hello?
Hey.
Still here.
Okay. I thought it happened again.
It didn't happen. We're here, Lonnie.
But yeah, and then afterwards, you know, like, because what would have made sense is just going right to the four-way tag match.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They instead went to the X Division match, which it was supposed to be Chris Sabin and Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
But I think
Kevin
Nash is going to
be wrestling in 2006.
Kevin Nash. Yeah.
Don't get me
so
started with Kevin Nash.
Let's go to Sabin and Shelley. Nash was here to collect a check, and you can tell. He didn't give a fuck about anything. The whole injury shit was stupid. It was just weird seeing Nash in such a B-player role, you know, because I forgot that he did some of this shit around this time. And I get that would be him saying, well, I tried to help younger talent. No one tells me, everyone tells me I don't fucking do that. I did that. So I understand that, but like.
You beat Chris Sabin at Slammiversary, but you did it to where like you had to be a chicken shit,
mm-hmm.
and Alex Shelley had to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they asked you to put over Chris Sabin, you showed up to the building in a neck brace. No, like the neck brace was just like the on-camera thing, but you pretty much went to Jeff Jarrett and said, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm out. Like, I'm not going to do it. So they came up with something else, and they decided to put you in a wheelchair, which you're cutting a backstage promo. You're in your underwear or a very long-ass pair of shorts.
Yeah.
Or a short-ass pair of shorts. And then they wheel you out after they tell you to put pants on, and you're still wearing fucking flip-flops.
Yeah, he just didn't – he didn't seem to give a fuck, which I don't blame him around this time. It's like – it just feels like he was phoning it in. Like, I do like Kevin Nash, and I think he gets a bad rap for – and I don't think he was phoning it in, like, 97, 98 WCW. Like, people, like when he had the book, I feel like he was working really hard, and he was trying to make it a good product.
You know what I think
more than people give him credit for.
I think it was – if Scott Hall was around, he would try.
Yeah. But I think everything from 99 after, he was like, we're never going to compete with WWE again.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck.
Well, that's why I think, like, cause, you know, 99 and all that, that's when Scott Hall was having a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
He would try harder when Scott Hall was around because he always used to say, it's no fun unless my buddy's here.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, he tried to get Scott Hall in 2007.
But he also did try Yeah, but it seemed like they were fucking around together in TNA when Scott Hall did get there. And it always felt like they were trying to recapture something.
Yeah.
And it always, like, any, I think Nash tried in 03, 02 in WWE. Like,
well, right, because it was for Hunter.
Yeah, with the shit with Hunter and stuff. I do think he tried. And I think he always, you know, cared when it seemed to be, like, a big deal. But I think at this point he was like, this shit isn't a big deal. This is a paycheck. But only he could tell you that. I'm just saying from outside perspective. And Johnny Devine's out here again. So you
right, because he was part of the paparazzi.
So, but Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley, seeing the guns go at it again after, or not again, but seeing them go at it after being so used to them as a team is fun.
Yeah.
And these guys know each other so well, so their chemistry was really good. I would actually give this like a 7-star.
I would say about 7 as well.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to remember, too, they were – Sabin was 24, I think, at the time. Shelley was 23.
Yes.
And they wouldn't form until, what, a year later?
They would form a year later, yeah.
A whole year?
I give this a 7, too.
Slammiversary, yeah.
Holy shitsky. But yeah, I thought this match was really good. They're still working on becoming better versions of themselves at this time. But they're still athletic, you know, kids that can go, and you can tell.
Yeah.
So I would give this a 7. They had a lot of fun with each other, and Sabin got the victory in a feel-good type moment. Kevin Nash had egg on his face, so it was a good little program for what it was.
Yeah. I liked it. I give it 7.5, actually.
Okay. Next up, we have Abyss, who was always one of my favorites in TNA. I always saw him as their Kane. Like, reliable, but also like that big, scary monster. but also reliable and can do
he
anything.
He was a true monster.
He was a true monster.
Yeah.
But he would also, like, whatever they threw at him, he would try. Just like the Joseph Park shit.
Yeah.
He barely talked, if at all.
Well, he didn't need to talk. He had James Mitchell. I mean, later on when he would do all the talking, yeah. But he really didn't need to cut a promo. You had Jim Mitchell there doing it for him.
Exactly.
But
I thought he was a decent babyface, too, when he was a babyface.
He was, but he's better as a heel.
Yeah.
Because of the character.
Oh, yeah.
I like him as a heel against, like, AJ and shit.
Yeah. Against AJ, stuff he did with Rhino earlier this year was pretty good.
Yeah.
When he challenged Christian for the belt earlier in the year.
Yes. He was a good big man.
Yeah.
I didn't mind him with Hogan when they first did that.
Oh, when they first had him as the when they first gave him the ring or whatever the fuck.
That shit was cool. But he beats the shit out of Spike Dudley, Brother Run. In a Falls Count Anywhere match. And it's okay. It reminds me of, like, Brother Run versus, like, a Sid or, you know, Bam Bam back in
his,
ECW.
His Mike Awesome stuff.
Yeah.
There's stuff with Mike Awesome.
Yeah. So
when they tried to build him as a credible challenger for Mike Awesome's ECW title.
And by the way, it worked because Paul's so genius and that crowd and everything. He was a credible challenger. And to me, Spike Dudley is very underrated. Because he's one of the best underdogs in wrestling history. And I don't think he gets the credit for that.
Yes.
Some of his WWF shit wasn't, like, it was kind of just filler and it didn't mean much to anything. But his ECW stuff, he was like, they believed in him, that crowd. That little fucking bastard, they thought he could do something. And he got huge pops. And, you know, I think he, like, sold out some of the buildings they got. You know, like, people came to see him and see if Spike could win the big one. So, and even like when he did the heel cruiserweight title thing in WWE, like he's had more of a story career than people give him credit for. So, and I thought he was all right here, but, you know, he's there to get his ass kicked and make Abyss look good, which I think he did. I would give this a six star.
I would actually say seven because I kind of enjoyed this because I liked where they were going. I mean, I thought they pivoted from it, which was stupid.
Yeah. What'd you think, Eric?
I liked it. I thought it was enjoyable. I loved the underdog story. And speaking from a Philadelphia fan, we loved the underdog. That's why he was so over in the ECW crowd.
Exactly.
Philadelphia fans love the underdog.
Yeah, and the thing about you know, Spike or Runt is, like, again, we said it earlier, and he was very well liked. Remember, he comes from a teaching background. He was a third grade teacher when he got in.
Well, yeah, and he seems like a nice guy, too. But also, like, with the overalls and the tie-dye, he's just an odd little guy that does not look like he belongs. He looks like a little twerp, but that makes you really like him.
Yeah.
And root for him. Like, he's got to go down. Yeah. As far as, like,
of course, if you
made the list, Rey Mysterio would have to be the top of it.
Of the underdogs.
Of the underdogs. And then you could throw, like, but you got to throw Spike up there, at least in the top five.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and like a Mick Foley, even though he's not small or anything, but because he was fat, he always.
Guys that think we're going to make it.
Yeah.
But did.
Yeah.
You know, again, you said Ray should be up there. I would definitely put Spike up there. Foley, because not a lot of people believed in Foley.
Yeah, because he always looked like a slub that could get his ass kicked.
Yeah. You know, another guy that could probably make that list would probably be a guy like Owen Hart, because I don't think a lot of, you know.
Yeah, he was kind of an underdog.
Yeah, he was kind of an underdog because he was living in the shadow of his brother. Now, if you listen to Boxman, Owen was a better worker than Brett.
And as good as – I think he is. But and as good as he is at wrestling, you can put Danielson in that list. Especially around the time he won the title. That felt like an underdog.
It was an underdog moment. It was a tremendous story because of the storyline that they built behind it. That was the last good thing – that that old piece of shit Vince McMahon did. Now, he was forced into it because the fans wanted to kill him after shoving Batista down their throat.
Yeah.
But, like, he knew enough, and I, to be honest with you, I don't even think he knew enough. I think people were just saying, we need to do this.
Yeah.
And he was still, he was at that point where it was like, okay, we'll listen to the people. I mean, I'm never going to listen to the people again, but we'll listen to the people and we'll do it. But then Danielson, you know, ended up hurting his neck. So, like, I mean, in my opinion, yes, it was a good story and all that, but his neck couldn't hold up. So it almost, to me, felt like it was kind of a waste of a storyline.
Well,
yeah.
Yes and no. Anything was such a, like, that's still, that's top 10 WrestleMania endings.
Yeah.
So you can't say it failed. Afterwards, it failed, the storyline as a whole. But
yeah,
for what that storyline did in the one night at WrestleMania is far worth.
And leading up to it. Leading
and,
up
and
to
the
it.
Clean
which,
ship was
it was
like, okay,
6 months leading up
he,
to it. Great.
Yeah. So he didn't get a long title run out of it, but the win itself was so monumental, and him with the two belts.
It was monumental, and then, like, I felt like it was just because his neck – and I understand, you know, you take the toll and all that.
You're not wrong. It faltered. It definitely faltered. You're not wrong. Because
yeah,
of the neck
you're not wrong.
Shit. And even with the neck shit, like, Kane was not the proper next guy to go up against him. Even if it was the corporate shit, and I understand what they were doing, like, there's more stuff you could give to him besides Kane.
I mean, the first person I would have thought of automatically was just, you know, because technically the guy won the Royal Rumble, so he should have gotten a one-on-one title shot. You should have put Batista with him.
Yeah, and I love Kane. But, yeah, you could put Batista with him and automatically do that. But, no, like, it's just – but, yeah, Runt Dudley – Brother Runt, the Runt Man, OG Runt, definitely belongs on that type of list. Now let's move on to, me, one of the highlights of the night. I almost gave it match of the night before I saw the second to last one. But Samoa Joe, Rhino, and Monty Brown.
What a fight this was.
What a fight. Three prime motherfuckers that are ready to go. Because this is right before Rhino got fat.
Yeah.
This is still, Rhino's still in good shape, and he's not, and even when he got fat, he did good. I'm not trying to say it all went downhill or anything, because I love his stuff with Heath. And
well, remember,
it shouldn't still be happening now, but him and Heath.
Well, they did drop the tag titles to the Motor City Machine Guns, by
good.
The way, in Impact.
Yeah, I know.
But the thing with Rhino, so if for a lot of people that don't know this, it, you know, 2005 to 2007, Rhino was not in a good headspace.
Mm-hmm.
In 2005, he got fired from WWE the night before WrestleMania. Well, they needed him to do a dark match, or a battle royal that was just going to be put on the DVD.
Yeah.
But he got into some trouble with his wife at the time, and he threw something at her head at a hotel. Yeah, I want to say this was, like, right after WrestleMania. It was either right after – it was either at WrestleMania or it was the European tour that happened after. Because this might have actually happened in Germany.
Yeah.
Or, no, they got into the fight at the hotel. And then while he was in Germany for the European tour, she called him and said, hey, just so you know, I'm divorcing you. So he destroyed another hotel room, and that's when he got fired.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, so 2006, we fast forward, he's in TNA. They called him to come back for the reboot of ECW. And he started cutting promos on the company saying, fuck you, you fired me last year, you want me back this year, but I'm in TNA now, go fuck yourselves. Okay? And then he started doing this. Well, then in the beginning of 2007... he was going through more personal issues because he wasn't allowed to see his daughter, so he started drinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just real fucked up. But here, he was probably...
it was some of his best wrestling, though.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, I can't... and it's fucked up, and I'm not trying to say, like, hard times, you know, that bring out your best work, even though, like, it infamously does in art. Like, Michelangelo, like, the best paintings come from pain. The best music comes from sadness.
Yeah.
Like, usually art and the best forms of art are, like look at music. Some of the best music came from, like, that Edgar Allan Poe's horror. He had such a hard life. Like, a lot of good things and good art and good presentation and entertainment comes from hard times that people are going through, and they kind of throw it into that. Usually that stuff's better than the fucking poppy cheery shit, you know? Like, oh, I'm all happy all the fucking time.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
And because you think about Kurt and everything that was going on with his wife and Perk Angle on the Percocets and shit, and he was going, but that TNA run was fucking awesome. And Angle was, like, honestly doing his best shit, even though he was on drugs and his life was falling apart.
Right, because remember, you know, we're just a few weeks away from him coming in.
Yeah.
And he had just gotten fired.
Because you think about it more with the drugs and like a Jake the Snake or a Hawk, to where they're going downhill. That's
yeah.
kind of how they paint it. But other times you get like a Kurt Angle or a Rhino that, yes, they're going downhill. And, yes, their life was going downhill. And, yes, they're on a pay-per-view not seen by millions like WWE. But they're doing some of their best wrestling.
Yeah.
They are doing some of their best work.
Cause
that's not a lie.
No, you're not lying. But also creative freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have people back there that, like, you're not being harassed. You're not a publicly traded company. You are pretty much just, okay, you're going to go do this. There's not a lot of people out there, but you have your hardcore niche.
Yeah, just think about, like, Matt Hardy. How bad was his life with the whole Lita and Edge shit? That stuff was fucking awesome, though. Even though his life, and it was, like, sad life imitating art, that his feud with Edge was cool.
Yeah.
It was really good. He should have won more than he did. But it was a good angle.
I think the only thing he won was the cage match. Right?
Yeah, but that cage was so fucking good. When he came off the top onto him on the table.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is sometimes, even though shit can be going downhill in your personal life, sometimes that's your best work. And Rhino, it could say to say, his TNA run was really good, even
yeah.
though his life was, like you said, going through turmoil.
Right, and you also have, first of all, like, this match is pretty much set to build up Samoa Joe.
And by which he was, of course, and he was being built at this time, and he hadn't lost anything yet, or pinfall or submission-wise. Rhino hit a very good promo before this that was
yeah.
very intense and badass. But also, you have three prime, kind of jacked, tough motherfuckers. I mean, Samoa Joe's not jacked, but still, he's a tough dude. Like, all three of these guys look like credible threats for a world title.
Yeah.
That's what worked about this match. All three of these guys looked at taking main event with Jarrett in half. But I really like this match. What did you think?
So you have Monty Brown here, and you kind of figured Monty Brown was going to be the one to do the job or to take the fall, because there was really no reason for him to win, because it had been speculated for quite some time how unhappy he was. Because he went down with a knee injury in March, came back in June. He wasn't necessarily happy to be back in June. And when they had him do the he wrestled Ron Killings in the King of the Mountain qualifier, and Killings won. So
okay.
Killings ended up in the match, which made no sense, because Monty, you would have felt like they would have built him up.
Yeah.
But see, you also had two guys who were, you know, both kind of unhappy.
Yeah. Pissed off at the company. Let's take our aggression out of this match.
Yeah.
Beat the shit out of each other.
Pissed off at the company. We hate, you know, we don't want to fucking work here anymore. Truth had more friends than Monty Brown did. So that's why Truth ends up going over in that King of Mountain match. And Monty was just kind of just...
Yeah, but Truth is here and Ron Killings is on the pre-show.
Yeah. Or, you know, Monty Brown is there, yeah. But, like, here, because, again, he would go to WWE, and, well, first, before, I think it was just a few weeks after this, maybe just, like, 2 weeks after this, he did the ballpark brawl in Buffalo. that Kenny Lehman and I were at.
Yes.
And what's funny about that, I'm pretty sure I've told the story before on the show, but he wrestled Matt Morgan.
Ooh.
And they start fighting in the crowd over by Kenny Lehman and I. And we had two little kids with us that were neighbors of Kenny. So they start coming over towards us. I look at Kenny and say, Kenny, we got to get the kids out of here. And then I look over and I say, Kenny, he didn't say anything to me. He just fucking took off with the kids and left me there to get fucking mauled over. Now,
what
happened was I grabbed one of the chair I was sitting in and I fold it up because I'm just like, if one of these motherfuckers comes at me, I'm swinging. Security guard looks at me and just shakes his head and goes, no, put it down. I looked at him and said, no, hey, get these fuckers back in the ring. If you want this chair down, those fucking assholes are going in the ring. So then I walked over towards Kenny. I said, thanks for leaving me hanging. He goes, fuck you. The kids are more important. So
yeah, he does.
It wasn't you.
At least Eric cares.
It wasn't. I mean, you fucked me over just about as many times.
But that's different.
Yeah.
No, but I thought this match was delicious. It was a great match. A lot of.
I thought you were lying earlier when you said you were going to use that terminology.
I was waiting for the right moment to put it in. No, but three credible guys beating the shit out of each other. To me, this was one of the highlights of the night. I liked that it was false count anywhere and they went everywhere. Samoa Joe was the right guy to win. There wasn't a lot wrong with this match. It was almost perfect for what it was. I give it an 8.5 out of 10.
I would almost say a 9.
I give it a 9, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's move on to Sherelda versus Gail Kim. And Gail Kim looked pretty good tonight.
Yeah.
But also, she can wrestle her ass off. What did you want to say about her entrance?
Me or Eric?
You.
She looked pretty fucking hot. I mean, there's really no other way to describe it. I mean, the team she was managing at the time, they got bumped from the show, but, you know, Vince Russo and all that, they probably saw what she, they were probably going to cut her and Sherelda because it was the match that really didn't need to happen. But then Vince Russo probably saw what she was wearing and he's like, nah, the guys get cut.
I'm glad they did, though. She's top 10 women of all time.
Yeah.
She's like number one top woman five. Outside of WWE. She's so fucking good. She was a trailblazer, you know? She was a fucking trailblazer. She was the women's revolution.
Have said it better myself.
Before the women's revolution. She was a better wrestler than Trish Stratus. Let's put that out there. She's a better wrestler than Lita in the ring. You know, she's one of the best in-ring wrestlers of all time, female-wise. So, and I'm glad she kind of got those flowers in TNA that they never really gave her in WWE. But this match.
I'm going to argue there.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that. I'll give this a 6 because it was just her wrestling herself pretty much.
Yeah.
Sherelda sucked.
Yeah. She got Sherelda, and which, by the way, Sherelda was at that Ballpark Brawl show too.
Good.
Under her actual or her other wrestling name, which was Jamie D.
Yeah.
And like she came in, she was a referee, and like what was funny was I was noting, like, how much she sucked or whatever. And I'm like, oh, my God, she's fucking awful. And then, because she's another one of those well-built, you know, muscular China-like types.
Yeah.
So, of course, I was shouting from the crowd about how, you know, she needs to decide what, you know, what gender she wants to be.
Jesus Christ.
and then during the main event, which was Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, and a couple of other people involved, but I forgot who. Oh, Christopher Daniels, Samoa Joe, Homicide. And I want to say there was somebody else involved. But I forget who. But it was a four-way. She comes sit out in a crowd, and she's like 20 feet away from us.
Jesus.
And Samoa Joe, or not Samoa Joe, Kenny says to me.
Same thing.
Yeah. Kenny says to me, he goes, oh, there's Jamie D. You going to say anything to her? I said, yeah, I am. So I shout over, you ugly bitch. And she looks over my way. And I just look over because I'm like, I ain't, you should come over here and kick my fucking ass. But yeah, no.
Did you point to Kenny?
Huh?
Did you point to Kenny?
No, I didn't point to Kenny.
Okay. I thought you were going
to...
You
tried to get
Kenny.
My ass kicked at these events so many times.
How many events have you been to with him?
We've been to a few.
I was going to say like four or five. I've been like...
I went to at least three with him because we went to the SmackDown ECW show with him, right? Was he there for
no,
that?
No, that was Kenny West.
We
You've
went to Ring of Honor with him.
You went to a Ring of Honor and you went to a Ring of Honor and to that SmackDown house show.
Yes. He never went to any of the Raws or anything with us?
I invited him, but he, you know, he's fucking cheaper than we are.
I've never been to an event with you, Daniel. Not yet.
Soon. WrestleMania, baby. WrestleMania.
The three of us.
He never went. You were in an event with him when we did that Naked Mud Wrestling here at the house. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not supposed to talk about that, right?
Well, the pay-per-view hasn't come out yet.
Oh.
Let's move on to Senshi, Low-Key, Caval, whatever you want to call the little bald angry man, not Doug. He's going by Senshi here. Low-Key, I know you don't like him because he's stiff and he hurts people and he's kind of a dickhead, but he in-ring, the man was phenomenal and put on some really good wrestling.
Oh, he
was a no-good butt-fucking asshole. But yes, he was good in the ring.
He knew how to wrestle.
Yeah, and if he liked you, yes, he would cooperate with you.
Yes, if he didn't, he'd be stiff as shit.
Yeah,
but Petey Williams and Lethal, I think he liked them because this was a really good match. This all three guys could go. Williams and his Canadian Destroyer are famous. Lethal's still killing it today, and Senshi, you know, defended the title. And it was really good. I thought this was one of the better matches on the card. I give it an 8 out of 10.
I would say about an 8, yeah.
The wrestling on this card is a lot better than some wrestling that we've covered on other pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because they care more about wrestling here.
Especially these last three matches.
Oh, I can agree with that.
What do you think, E Nasty?
I liked it. I give it an 8.
All right.
I agree.
He agrees, Doug.
Good.
All right. Now, to my match of the night, the Latin American Exchange, Homicide and Hernandez, the original version, which was my favorite version, against AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels for the NWA Tag Team titles. And AJ and Christopher Daniels properly defend. We don't have a title change on this card. This match was fucking awesome. From toe to toe, I really love these two as rivals too, but I love them as a tag team. I thought that was AJ's best tag team.
Yeah.
I thought they were really good together and athletic. You could tell they were friends and they had a good time together and they had good tag team moves. They kind of went low at the end, but good. And they could work really well. And LAX is one of the best TNA tag teams. Hernandez was a great big man, and Homicide could go with the smaller guys.
All right, so, personally, I don't like LAX because they're all three of them, including Conan, are scumbags.
Okay.
Not even necessarily Homicide, because Homicide really didn't do anything wrong. He just hung out with shitty people.
Yeah.
I mean, one of his best friends is Eddie Kingston, who is the most horrible person on the fucking planet. And like nobody can stick up for him. Oh, he's so good in the ring. No, he sucks. He's fucking dog shit. But like Hernandez was an actual fucking asshole. Conan was a... My issue with Conan is, especially here, because here it was kind of like, you know how like I've bitched about before, like the guys that have like the insurance policies and like you can't touch them, like you can't hit them because they can't take bodily harm, but they can hit you.
Yeah.
I don't like that shit. If you're going to get involved, like if I'm wrestling somebody and your manager comes up and hits me,
you get to punch.
And I go to hit you and you're like, no, you can't touch me. I got an insurance policy. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to cost you some fucking money because you're irritating the fucking piss out of me. So I'm going to hit you. And like it was Conan, because Conan couldn't really be touched at the time because he was dealing with his kidney issues.
Yeah.
So he made sure to put that in writing. He's like, look, I can touch you, but you can't hit me. Fuck you. I think they should hit you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Hit you so hard that that's what puts your broken ass on fucking dialysis.
Jesus Christ.
I hate that motherfucker.
yeah, because of wrestling stuff.
Yeah, but like, and Hernandez, you know, this is before, you know, Hernandez went into his, you know, Michael Irvin phase where, you know, even though he was really good at his job, he still got arrested every week.
He was a good wrestler, though.
Yeah.
I liked Hernandez.
Yeah.
Just in the ring.
Well, yeah, in the ring he was fine. And then, like, afterwards, like, you know, in 2010 when they really wanted to push him and all that shit, you know, Dixie was, you know, just thought he was the greatest thing in the world. Bischoff got a look at his arrest record and he's just like, yeah, I don't know if we should push the guy. Bischoff's just like, yeah, I don't think so. Because Bischoff is smart.
That's funny. But this match was awesome. I think they played as good heels at least.
Oh, they did. They were a great heel team. I enjoyed the match. I would say a 9.
And AJ and Daniels is a good heel too because he's a good shit talker. And AJ can pretty much has proven he can do either or. Their style is net, especially back then, because AJ has developed a lot more of a safer style as he's gotten older and older. And there's nothing wrong with that. You don't want to hurt yourself out there.
Yeah.
He's definitely a lot more Shawn Michaels like now in the way he works. But back then, he would get crazy and he would have a lot of fun and just fly and he didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And that was one of my favorite versions of him. Now, he can work with anybody and make it a good match now. So he's a much more clean, established, you know, performer.
Yeah.
He's more honed in on his skills now. But back then, he would throw everything at the ceiling. He's more polished. That's a great word for it, Eric. But,
now, like, and here's the thing, too. Like, here he was a good babyface, but, like, you go to, like, 2008, 2009-ish, when he was doing the whole, oh, I'm so, you know, I'm sick of all the veterans and all that shit.
Yeah.
Where he started acting like this disrespectful young guy.
That was written bad, though.
Yeah.
That was bad material.
It was bad material because even though, like, you know, Joe and AJ were supposed to be, like, the baby faces and all that, you had them coming out as disrespectful punks.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't like...
Isn't that when he was with Christian?
Huh?
Isn't that when he was with Christian and Tomko?
Yeah, he was a heel with Christian and Tomko. But I'm talking, like, main event Mafia.
Yeah, when he was the...
Okay.
What were they called? The Revolution?
The Front Line.
Yeah, the Front Line sucked. And we've talked about that at the beginning of this show, like 2 years ago, in the stable tier list.
Yeah.
We talked about how bad the Front Line was. That's not really his fault going up against some of the most popular wrestlers ever. Like, he was going to look arrogant going against those old guys, you know?
Yeah.
There's a way to make that. The Main Event Mafia should have never been the heels there. It should have been the other way around. The Young Bucks should have been the heels. Winning and taking over.
Yeah.
The Main Event Mafia should have been coming from behind. Like how the New Blood did it with the Billionaires Club.
Right.
But...
And what was funny, though, too, was that, like, the Millionaires Club, they were all coming off heel runs.
Yeah.
when that happened. And a lot of these new blood guys were guys that they were just cheering for back at the Uncensored pay-per-view 3 weeks earlier. Now all of a sudden they're all heels.
Yeah. I'm not saying that was done right. I'm just saying that's closer to what they seem to be wanting.
Yeah.
But around this time, AJ's style was so exciting, and so was Christopher Daniels, that they were natural baby faces.
Yeah.
They didn't even have to talk. You just want to root for them because you see them flying over the fucking ropes. And it's like, ooh, that's exciting. I want to root for this guy. Yeah, this match is a 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Jeff Jarrett versus Sting. Eric gives it a 9, too. Jeff Jarrett with Scott Steiner versus Sting with Christian Cage. This is the main event. This is the, of course, the resistance. This is the meat and potatoes. This is the dessert, the cherry on top of the cake. This is what we came for. This is what Doug comes for. Sting's got Christian Cage, which, by the way, I'm sorry, but going in this with no context whatsoever and not knowing what's going to happen, I already knew Christian Cage was going to turn heel.
Yeah.
It just felt super obvious.
I did too.
The way he was talking, the promo.
Promo. Like, he was getting too fired up.
It was kind of like MJF with Cody when they did that shit. It's like, he's going to turn on him.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, Christian was coming off a babyface run, so it's a little different than MJF. But it was still, just the way he was talking in the back and how he was so excited, it's like, he's going to fuck Sting over.
Yeah.
Yep. And they were overhyping him at that. They kept saying he's going to be in Sting's corner all night long, and you knew
yeah.
he was going to turn.
I do think
they were overplaying that too much.
They were overplaying that, and I know they wanted to. This still had a big fight feel to it, but it did take a little bit away from the big fight feel. Steiner and Cage fucking around a little too much.
Yeah.
It would have been a little better without them, I think.
You know what it kind of reminds me?
And then Cage just does his thing at the end.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? So, the 1994 King of the Ring, it was Diesel and Bret.
Yes.
And Shawn Michaels was in Diesel's corner.
Mm-hmm.
And Bret Hart was going to bring somebody to be in the corner, in his corner, to kind of neutralize Shawn, and it ended up being Amble Neidhart. Well, again, Shawn was also kind of among that, you know, among the deal, too, where he was kind of dealing with injuries. Or he was telling people he was injured so nobody would hit him.
Yeah.
Because he was Shawn Michaels' ultimate pussy at the time.
He was a douchebag. You can say it.
Yeah. Douchebag, pussy, same context. So, like, and a lot of that match, and it was a 22-minute match, a lot of it was Shawn Michaels fucking around and the Anvil chasing him around, not getting to him. Because
yeah.
the referee would always stop him. And every time he would stop the Anvil, Shawn would go and take a cheap shot at Bret. Okay? That's what this kind of reminded me of. It's just like Scott Steiner would deliver cheap shots as Christian Cage would, you know, distract the referee because he's trying to get to Steiner. And, you know, the referee would stop him but not see what Steiner was doing. Even though there was like three other referees in the entryway.
Yeah.
Because one of the – well, there was at least one other referee in the entryway when Steiner hit Sting in the leg with the chair. Because they took for a while, to get to the back.
Yeah. So you just kind of knew – so that kind of took away from it a little bit. But besides that, I thought the match was a lot of fun. I was rooting for Sting the whole time. I thought Jarrett worked as a heel. I thought him throwing Jarrett into random shit was pretty cool. And the whole brawling aspect of the match. I thought the match, I think these are natural rivals, you know.
Yeah.
They work against each other. They don't really need to be wrestling each other, but they were good against each other. And I didn't mind the Christian Cage. The way he did it with Sting coming off the top, even though it seemed like, all right, like, Sting, how do you not know what this guy's about to do? Like, he's sitting there like this with the guitar, like, come on, Sting, just jump. I'm not going to do nothing but just jump. But he's got the guitar, like, ready. Like, he's, like, holding it like a fucking baseball bat. Like, like, it's like Sting.
Yeah. Like, Cage is standing out. It's like, no, he's not.
He's not standing out. He's about to fuck him up. But the way he did hit the shot on the money, though, with the guitar. That was it bursted the right way. Like, that was a cool guitar shot to the head. So that kind of worked. And then Jarrett crawled over for the heel win. And I thought it was all good. I thought this was a solid ending to a really good pay-per-view, and I would give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
So would I.
Can we talk a little bit of the backstory leading up to this, where they call it the Orlando Screwjob, where Jarrett won the title in the first place?
Oh, when he won it at Slammiversary?
Slammiversary, yeah.
All right, so they're under – so Jim Cornette is in charge of TNA right now. You know, he's part of management. At Slammiversary, Earl Hebner low-blowed – I think it was
either
Christian
or – It's funny how he got him involved in this.
Earl Hebner low-blowed either Christian or Sting. Larry Zbyszko pulled the ladder
no.
over. Huh?
No, it's the other way around. I thought Earl pushed the ladder because he was down. Larry did the Zbyszko low blow thing, I think. And then Earl Hebner was down, and then he got up and pushed the ladder as Christian and Sting were fighting over the belt.
All right. Anyway. All right. They both fucked things up for Christian and Sting.
Eric was right, wasn't he?
He may have been.
You want to gloss over it when you're the one being.
No,
right.
I am right. I watched it. I watched it a couple times.
So you were wrong, and Eric was right about something was wrestling.
All right. Anyway.
Are you going to give me my praise? I got something right. over Doug.
Yeah.
All right.
Just make sure that when you brag about this to other people, you actually include context on it and, actually tell it correctly, unlike the person that beat me in the debate last week that, when she told the story, she went and said, oh, I beat Doug at something.
That's all you really need to say, though.
Yeah. So, like, if you want to brag about being right or beat me at something, that's fine. But be correct and
correct like you just weren't?
Yes. Correct like I just wasn't. Be correct about it and make sure you give context to where, like, because if I get made fun of, I better get made fun of correctly. Because if I have to correct the way you're making fun of me, then you're a fucking idiot.
Wait, the way Eric just corrected you?
No, I'm bitching about something else that happened.
I know you're not, but I'm just having fun with the moment.
Yeah.
You know I'm just messing with you, Doug. How many times have you messed with me on this show?
Very true.
Too many to count.
You
maybe
it.
Even in this episode.
Yeah. So he got me. He was right over me. I mean, he's fired, but he was right over
me. It was a good last show. No, but I thought this match was really good. Let's give our final thoughts, unless you're still making that point, whatever it was. It's lost.
It's lost.
I'll give my final thoughts first. I thought that this was a really solid TNA show in a good era with a lot of young guys that were ready to work their asses off and give the crowd a fun time, especially after a fire. It felt like they were kind of making up for the first half hour of people just probably like, I want to go home.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed, like, the Samoa Joes and the Monty Browns and the Styles and the Daniels on here. And even, like, the Senshi. Like people just worked their asses off here. And the matches were so good and probably better than what you're getting on the other channel at this point. So I thought the wrestling was really good here. The promos were all right, and, like, the storylines, besides, like, the main event storylines, probably needed a little work, and maybe not the greatest storylines on planet Earth. But the matches themselves were a lot of fun to watch, and I didn't get bored at all, really, during this thing. And there wasn't a lot of filler.
Yeah.
Even the filler there was, like Brother Runt and Abyss, was a fun watch. So I thought it was a good pay-per-view, and I give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, because each pay-per-view was kind of just built up, you know, properly.
Yeah, nothing felt like nothing. The world didn't get changed, you know. No belts change hands or anything, but I just thought it was a solid pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So I go 8. All right, Eric.
I'll go next. I enjoyed the pay-per-view besides the first half an hour where they the fire and stuff, but it is what it is. I enjoyed it. Each match was fun, especially the last 3-4 matches. They were really good. I give this a 9 out of 10. I enjoyed it. I like the storyline where it progresses. Well, as we said earlier, we'll probably do another one. But I liked where this was going, especially with Kurt Angle coming in and that storyline with Samoa Joe. We'll probably do some shows with that too. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right. So, to me, 2000, probably like when they started on Spike TV in October of 2005 to probably, I would say, to the start of the Hogan era, even though I liked a lot of the stuff like when they started the Hogan era, but I would actually say like their best stuff was 2005 to the beginning of 2009. Because, you know, when the main event Mafia came in and all that, and a lot of that stuff, I mean, the wrestling was still good, but a lot of that stuff was kind of stupid because, you know, we talked about it earlier.
Yeah, I didn't love it.
All right. But here, they were starting to cook on all cylinders because you were starting to get big names in to work with people.
Yeah.
And so this pay-per-view did a good job. Now, the whole fire thing, you know, you could have cut that out.
Yeah.
Like, I understand not cutting it out of live pay-per-view, but on the fucking DVD release, it doesn't need to be there.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, you know, but a lot of this stuff was good. So I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10.
All right. Yeah, I think we could all agree this was a good, for the first TNA pay-per-view we did on the show, it was a pretty solid show.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't think it was monumental. Yeah. Like, it's not a 10 show or like, but it was a lot of fun with a lot of good wrestling in it and some cool things to keep you interested. So I'd love to do TNA again. We will. Why don't you tell the good people what we're doing next week? Do you know?
Yeah, well,
I got a good idea. I got a good idea.
If not, then I have an idea.
All right. What's your idea?
What I talked to you about earlier, but it wouldn't be a fan vote. It would be our individual list.
Okay.
Do you want to do that?
You might as well tell him before he.
Wait, did you say you have an idea?
I don't have an idea. Which one?
All right, you give your idea.
I don't know. We can do that in the future. We can do that in a couple of weeks.
What is it? Someone give me a topic.
It was going to be Bound for Glory, but we can. Since we just did it, we can do it.
Yeah, we'll hit that in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We just did a TNA pay-per-view. Let's do, was your idea really good? Were you excited about it? Or
I wasn't really excited about it. I just think it was timely because the person's birthday is coming up next week.
Well, what is it?
My idea was a top 10 Goldberg moments in matches.
Let's do that. I like the sound of that.
You sure?
Yes. That's fine with me.
What was yours? Daniel?
Top 20 tag teams of all time, but we would do our own list because we did a fan vote last time, and I don't like the fan votes. So I would do our own list for our top 20 favorite tag teams of all time. But we'll do that in different. We'll do the Goldberg moments and matches.
Yeah, because I think his birthday is 2 days after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be it would be next week. So.
I mean, the ultimate timestamp on all the matches is going to be like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Like all together.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, it will not take us long. A
lot of squashes.
To do such a thing.
I can come up with the list right now, though. There's some good ones. So, yeah, we'll do that. Eric, start sending some suggestions in the group chat, and we'll get a list together for top 10 moments and matches for Goldberg. There's nothing else going on the network this weekend. Me and Mindy might do something for Stabcast on Sunday, but we'll keep everybody posted. And
next week's Unscripted Unlimited is going to be our year-end awards.
Yes.
So that's going to be next Saturday night, New Year's Eve, 7 p.m. Eastern time. I'm sure Boxman and Smarik are still doing a show, so check the wrestling outlet out on YouTube Wednesdays at 10:15, 10:20 Eastern time, Hollywood Hangouts. Saturday or Sundays, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. When he wants to do a show, I know he's been kind of not doing shows lately, but again, he's getting old. So, he's getting old. So he's getting lazy. These are his words.
Has he not been doing shows lately?
I think, he hasn't been doing a lot of Hollywood hangouts.
Yeah.
That's what he had told us. I mean, he still wants us to plug them. But...
I was trying to go on him once with him.
Yeah. Well, you're young and vibrant, and he's old and lazy. Good guy, though. Be an even better guy if he does a lot of these sitcom debates with us. But all right, also check out Sean, Elite Diplodoc, on YouTube and Twitch. Eric and Clintus will be back with Hard Hits, I believe, next week. If not, then I just lied to you.
And we're out of here.
Probably right. Thursday, because I have something on Wednesday.
Okay. All right, Dan, you and I got to go get a bikini wax. Let's go.
You guys have a good time. Be careful out there. Everybody have a safe and happy holiday.
Thank you, sir. Have a Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
You too.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise. Playing in the street. Gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face. You big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place. Singing, we. Really?